Now, back to Vocal Point with your host, Jerry Newcomb, on GraceNetRadio.com.
Well, in just a moment, we should be talking.
At the moment, please leave me a name.
Oh, hello. Yes. Well, we're trying to reach Herb Titus. Herb Titus is a constitutional attorney. At one time, he actually was the director of Pat Robertson's law school, which is the Regent. It used to be called CBN School of Law, something like that. And it's, of course, based in Virginia Beach. Herb Titus actually used to be formerly with... Yes, Herb Titus?
Yes, it is.
This is Jerry Newcomb. Hi, I was just talking a little bit about you as we were trying to reach you. And you are formerly an ACLU attorney, and then you came to work for our side, and I'm so glad for that. You are one of the sharpest attorneys I've ever met, and I've met a few. You're great.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much.
Sure. All right. So tell us about the HHS mandate and tell us about this friend of the court brief that you all have been involved in to fight
the
mandate.
Our firm, which is the William J. Olson PC firm in Vienna, Virginia, filed an amicus brief in support of the Conestoga Wood Specialties Corporation. You don't hear so much about them because of the Hobby Lobby case, but the two cases, Hobby Lobby and Conestoga, are joined and are now before the United States Supreme Court. And the question is whether or not the Obamacare contraceptive mandate violates the constitutional rights under the Free Exercise of Religion Clause. And also a question whether it violates a statute called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was passed back in the 1990s. Jerry, our brief doesn't address the statutory question, which is the primary question in the Hobby Lobby case, but addresses the question of the free exercise of religion that's raised in the Conestoga case. And we go back to the early history of the free exercise clause and the text of that clause and its original meaning in developing an argument that the contraceptive mandate violates the free exercise of religion as secured by the First Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Now, first of all, let's say this. Regardless of where somebody stands on the issue of contraceptives, we have to realize that part of this are abortion-inducing drugs. So it is a form in which the pro-life issue is at stake. But even if you, let's say, disagreed, let's say this was purely contraceptive, that had nothing to do with any form of abortion, okay? And let's say you were a Protestant and you didn't agree, let's say, with Catholics of conscience who disagreed with contraceptives because that's the teaching of their church. Isn't there a fundamental principle here where they, being forced against their conscience to pay for that which they don't agree with, isn't that wrong? I mean, in other words, we might not agree with it, but as Huckabee once said famously, we're all Catholics now in reference to that idea.
Well, it's not only wrong, Jerry, it's unconstitutional. And, of course, as you know, judges don't have any authority to tell us what's right or wrong. And the Constitution is built upon principles of what is right and what is wrong. But the important thing is, well, what does the Constitution say about this? Now, you're absolutely correct that the contraceptive mandate wouldn't necessarily have to include abortifacients, which, of course, it does in this particular case. It doesn't matter because what's at issue here is what you might say is freedom of the mind. That is, the freedom of every individual, Christian or no, atheist or believer, whatever it may be, what their worldview is, it's not for the government to use the coercive power that the government has to force people to support an opinion with which they disbelieve or abhor. This comes right out of Thomas Jefferson's 1786 bill for establishing religious freedom in Virginia, and incidentally, it was that bill, as well as Article 1, Section 16 of the Virginia Constitution, that was the foundation for the First Amendment religion guarantees in the Constitution. So what we're saying here is that what this mandate actually does is it forces people to pay for ideas, the propagation of which are sinful and tyrannical. This is what Jefferson said. You can't do that.
Yeah.
This is completely outside the coercive power of the government.
They're a violation of the holy author of our religion, who, being Lord both of body and mind, chose reason as opposed to coercion to get his message across. Now, the first part of that was a quote. The second part was I was getting into paraphrase. But it's interesting that the holy author of our religion, I wonder who that would be. Go ahead.
Well, you're exactly correct. Who else could it be? It certainly isn't Muhammad.
It's Jesus.
Of course it is.
Later, when Jefferson wrote his autobiography in 1821, so many, many, many years later, he said that there was a measure to try to add the words Jesus Christ when the bill was being passed, but it didn't pass, thus showing that this bill applies to everybody, whether Hindu, Muslim, or, you know, Mohammedan, whatever, Jew, Catholics, whatever. But still, the bottom line is the holy author of our religion could be nobody but Jesus. And by the way, that very bill opens up, Almighty God hath created the mind free. So that's
yes,
the premise.
Yes, it does. And it demonstrates that freedom of religion, as it appears, first of all, in the 1776 Virginia Constitution, and then in the 1786 bill and the preamble to the bill, as well as Madison's remonstrance, which is very famous, ends up appearing in the First Amendment. Now, what's important here is to realize is that the principle of freedom of religion in America is a Christian principle. You can't find this principle in any other religion. This is based upon Jesus Christ's teaching, you render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and unto God what belongs to God. Now, what does Jefferson say? Jefferson says, what we believe to be true doesn't belong to Caesar. It belongs exclusively to God.
Right.
So what's happened with this Obamacare mandate is that they're forcing Conestoga Wood Specialties and other businesses to endorse an educational counseling program that encourages women to have sex without risk of getting pregnant. And so what you see here is the government using its coercive force to force people to support one particular view as to what sex is all about and what procreation is all about.
Mm-hmm. Can you
completely contrary to this principle that's set forth in the Constitution.
Absolutely. What is Conestoga Wood Specialties?
It's located up in Pennsylvania, in the Lancaster, Pennsylvania area. It's a family of believers, I believe Mennonite believers. And what's important is that they have a business in which the government is now telling them that they have to promote among their employees a world view about sex and about reproduction that the government wants to be promulgated all over the country.
Yes.
And so what we see here is that the government is entering into the field of opinion, which Thomas Jefferson said cannot be an object of civil government. It's not for the government to tell you what to believe or what not to believe on anything,
mm-hmm.
whether it's religion, geology, geography, mathematics, English, whatever it may be. It's not the government's business to force the populace to support opinions that the government happens to want to promote.
Boy, you're so right. This is Herb Titus we're talking with, a constitutional attorney, and he's involved in one of these cases fighting the HHS mandate. Hey, by the way, Herb, isn't it true that Obamacare never would have passed in the first place were it not for the fact that that the president made some promises to some pro-life Democrats who held out saying, we want to be sure that there'll be no abortion supported in Obamacare. And then remember, he gave an executive order saying, okay, no abortion supported in Obamacare. And now here we are 4 years later, and it seems like a bait and switch.
Well, it is a bait and switch. As a matter of fact, HHS farmed this question out to a committee of people whose names you don't know. I didn't know them until I read the report, but it's called the Institute of Medicine, a non-government agency. And it's the committee that made the decision as to the contraceptive policy that now has become law. It was made up not by Congress, not even by members of the executive branch, but it was made up by people who answer to no political organization, to no political party, to no voters, to no electorate. And so what's happened is that you have the opinion of an elite 16 people who have now got their opinions in law, and now the government is backing the opinions of these people and forcing everybody in America to agree.
Wow. All right, now, Wheaton College. I went to Wheaton Grad School. Liberty University, Notre Dame, these are some of the organizations that are fighting the HHS mandate. And I understand that so far, many of these decisions have actually worked out well on average for those fighting the HHS mandate. Can you comment on that? What's the track record so far?
Well, the track record up to this particular point is somewhat mixed. Conestoga lost in the Court of Appeals. Hobby Lobby won in the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Liberty, which actually raised this question before anybody else did, has lost even before the United States Supreme Court, in part because they got there before the whole, the whole package was put together. It will be interesting to see what this Supreme Court does. If you have been following it at all, Jerry, there's a situation involving a group of nuns for the poor.
Oh, yeah. And, the Little Sisters of the Poor, yeah.
Yeah, the Little Sisters of the Poor, thank you.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's such a vicious program, and it's all designed to force people to adopt a particular view of the well-being of women. This committee, which has made their, which HHS has made their opinion as the controlling, governing opinion, indicate that the well-being of women is to have recreational sex without fear of pregnancy. And that is then promoted through the required insurance policies that organizations like Liberty and other organizations have to buy and have to promote. So it's not just the educational and counseling aspect of it, but it's the ultimate criteria, and that is this notion that somehow the government can define for the people and use their coercive power to back it up that the well-being of women is equivalent to sex with whomever they wish at whatever time they wish, and contraceptive mandate is to cut down on the risk of pregnancy.
You know, there's a sense in which sexual politics, sexual libertinism, is at the root of so many of the conflicts. I mean, for example, if you look at abortion, that ultimately gets back to that issue of sexual ethics and sexual libertinism. That's true also with same-sex marriage or just even homosexuality in general. And there's a famous quote from, it was originally in the Casey decision in the U.S. Supreme Court, and then it was re-quoted in the Lawrence v. Texas decision. And it's something along the lines of, you know, whatever the right of self-determination is, at its heart, the right of self-determination to do whatever you want to, that is the most basic building block of freedom. Something to that effect. I'm not saying it well, but it just shows you, wow, there's real worldviews in conflict here in America, and even at the Supreme Court itself.
No question about that. Going back to the language that you quoted earlier, well aware that Almighty God created the mind free. Now, notice what this is that there's a law of the created order with respect to the mind. You go back to the Declaration of Independence, where it says that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Now, it's the one who does the endowing that defines what the meaning of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is. Today, what has happened is that the United States of America, generally as a country, and many states in the United States, have divorced themselves from the law of the Creator. They still like to say all men are created equal, but they don't want to obey the law of the Creator. They want to make up their own laws. And that's what this case is about, is an effort to capture the coercive power of the government to win what is really an issue that belongs to the Spirit of God, that belongs to reason and conviction, as the Virginia statute that defines religion says, not to force or violence.
Yeah. Wow.
Without the Christian worldview, Jerry, there is no freedom of religion.
And that's why it seems like everything is breaking down. I mean, it's like the old famous quote from John Adams, who himself was kind of Unitarian thinking in near the end of his life. But what did he say? He said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." And I think we're seeing that virtually on a daily basis. We're talking right now with Herb Titus, who is a constitutional attorney and was one of the chief authors of a Friend of the Court brief. And in fact, this Friend of the Court brief, Joyce Meyer Ministries helped sponsor it, or you did it on behalf of them, or Southwest Radio Bible Ministry, the U.S. Justice Foundation, the Abraham Lincoln Foundation. Sounds pretty good to me. Bob Marshall, he's great. He used to work for Judy Brown. He's a very strong pro-lifer, and I believe he's a representative in the state of Virginia, in their House or Senate. And so what does this mean, though, when you do a Friend of the Court brief? Do the members of the Supreme Court or their staff actually read these things, do you think?
Well, you would hope so. We don't have any guarantee that the brief will be read by the judges and their staff. We're hopeful that they would be. There were, I think 80 to 90 briefs filed just on behalf of Hobby Lobby and Conestoga.
Wow.
Much less the number of briefs are going to be filed on the other side. So there's quite a bit of reading to be done here. The one thing that distinguishes this brief from all of the other briefs on behalf of the Hobby Lobby and Conestoga is that it's based upon a principle of freedom of religion as contrasted to religious tolerance. One of the things, Jerry, that's been lost in America is that in Virginia, there was a fight, and Madison, Jefferson, and the Baptists were on one side and the established church was on the other, of whether or not the principle that would govern relationships between church and the state would be based upon toleration are based upon freedom. Toleration was the norm at that particular time, and of course what people found out under the regime of religious toleration is sometimes religious faiths were not tolerated.
Right.
And so freedom was to set the people free from the government coming in and saying, oh, we've got an overriding interest. We have something else that's more important than your faith or your convictions, and therefore we can override them. And Jefferson and Madison picked up from the Baptists and said, look, we're going to have a regime of freedom of religion. That's why it says free exercise of religion. It doesn't say religious freedom. And what we find in the history is that religion is primarily a question of opinion. It's not a question of religious opinion, but any opinion. And so the government has to stay out of the opinion business, period.
Well, now, isn't that interesting?
Even if they have good reason to get involved.
But in a sense, wouldn't you say, since one of the Supreme Court decisions, Torcaso v. Watkins, 1961, in a footnote where they define religion very loosely. They say, well, you know, in a sense, these opinions could be considered a religion, and they have secular humanism there, and I think even atheism. And yet that seems to be the established religion today in the public schools in many contexts, where a Christian child is forbidden from, you know, quoting Jesus or something like that in a test, even though Martin Luther King did, and even though Thomas Jefferson did. Thomas Jefferson read the words of Jesus all the time, the teachings of Jesus.
Well, I think what has happened here is that the Supreme Court has gotten into a sociological or a theological debate over what is religion. When, as a matter of fact, religion, when it appears in a constitutional document, is a legal term. It's a legal principle. And it's spelled out in Article 1, Section 16, what that legal principle is. It says that the religion is the duty that we owe to our Creator, enforceable only by reason and conviction, not by force or violence. Now notice what that means then is it doesn't ask the question what is religious and what's not religious. It asks the question is what kind of duty is this? Is it a duty that the civil government has been granted jurisdiction to enforce, such as murder? Or is it a duty that God has reserved to himself that it's enforceable only by reason and conviction, like, for example, the duty of love, the Good Samaritan? He's not forced by the government to help the person who lays in the ditch on the wayside. It's a completely voluntarily and unconditional act. And that's precisely what religion is. Whether you do it for a religious reason or a non-religious reason, it doesn't matter.
When you say Article 1, Section 16, you mean of the Virginia Constitution?
Yes, I'm sorry, I should have made that very clear. Yes, and you find that religion is defined there, and it's interesting. Back in 1889, the United States Supreme Court said this. It says, religion is not defined in the First Amendment, but it is defined in Article 1, Section 16 of the Virginia Constitution. And they traced that 1776 doctrine that's in the Virginia Constitution through history and said that's the very view that's encapsulated in the First Amendment. And indeed, the language free exercise of religion is found in the First Amendment. It's found in Article 1, Section 16 in the Virginia Constitution, but it's not found in any other constitutional document.
Huh. By the way, what was that U.S. Supreme Court decision of 1889?
That was the Reynolds versus United States, in which the court concluded that the law prohibiting polygamy was within the jurisdiction of the civil government. And, of course, the reason for that is because of the significant economic foundation for the nation that's embodied in the monogamous family. And that's what the court went off on. They said that if you allow polygamy to be the norm of family life, it undermines the economy, undermines the political freedom of the nation, and introduces lawlessness, which is contrary to the civil government's duty with regard to protecting and fostering the economic system that is basically the family free enterprise system upon which the nation's economic system is based.
Well, what does that say about same-sex marriage?
Well, it says a lot, because that does not rest upon that same law. Again, what it is it's man thinking that he knows better than God how people should then live, and particularly with regard to the economic foundation. And look at, it's so interesting if you go back to Genesis chapter 1, and remember that's where Jefferson started, whereas Almighty God created the mind free. He started at Genesis 1, 2. And so Genesis 1, chapter 26 through 28 says this. It says that male and female, and said, go and multiply and exercise dominion. Well, notice the exercise of dominion is the economic aspect of human life, and you have it coupled with a man and a woman multiplying, that is, having children. So that's the very foundation upon which the nation's economic system is built.
Wow. All right, now, when you're building your whole case in fighting the HHS mandate, and we're talking right now with constitutional attorney Herb Titus, you're building your whole case along the lines of free exercise of religion. Today, when the president speaks about religious freedom and so forth, and other people, they talk about, or they'll use the phrase, freedom of worship. Is there a difference between freedom of worship and free exercise of religion?
Yes, worship is only one aspect of religion. And notice, it's very small. It's very confined. And you can find freedom of worship in places like Massachusetts, which was an established church state. And again, in Massachusetts, what prevailed was religious toleration. But what prevailed in Virginia, because they use religion, which encompasses a lot more than worship, and they said that is part of the free exercise of religion, because those duties are duties that are enforceable by nature, only by reason and conviction, not by force or violence.
Hmm. All right, now, suppose somebody was working for this wood company, Conestoga Wood Specialists, or they were working for Hobby Lobby, and they didn't agree with Hobby Lobby's views on, you know, no sex outside of marriage, okay? And they wanted contraceptives. What's the bottom line that they would then, according to the HHS mandate, they would be able to get it? Or is it more like any company, regardless, even if you have no employees that want to have anything to do with contraceptives or abortion-inducing drugs, you will be forced to pay for it no matter what? Is that the way it works?
That's the way it works, because the government says we line up with these 16 experts that were on this non-government agency committee that decided that the well-being of women was best supported by completely sex without rules, recreational sex, and it's the job of Obamacare to reduce the risk of pregnancy to nothing. And that's what the contraceptive mandate is all about.
Wow. When does the Supreme Court hear this case?
Jerry, I can't remember exactly when it is, but I think
it's in
March.
Okay.
It's in March. I believe the oral argument is scheduled. And, of course, as you know, in every term of the Supreme Court, they will render a decision no later than the end of June, or at the latest, early first week of July.
Is there much at stake in this case?
Very much at stake. I believe this is one of the most significant cases that it's even, in some respects, more significant than the same-sex marriage cases. But it's a very significant case in terms of the direction in which the country's going.
You know, it's strange, too, because Obamacare doesn't seem to be working. You know, just the program itself isn't working, and yet they seem to be very diligent about this HHS mandate thing.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that the individual mandate, as contrasted to the mandate with regard to businessmen, stays in place? And this, of course, is one of the things that we have to realize, is Obamacare has nothing to do with helping the uninsured be insured and the uninsurable to have insurance. The Obamacare has to do with lifestyle. This is the way you shall live, and we're going to make it economically very, very burdensome if you want to live a different way. And indeed, it may even cost you your liberty.
Wow. And so if Conestoga would, heaven forbid, or Hobby Lobby, if they lose, then what happens? They have to pay lots of fines to the point where they would probably go out of business.
As to whether they're going to compromise their religious convictions, or they're going to submit themselves to the draconian fines that are awaiting them under the bill.
Wow. I mean, to the point where this would put some of these companies out of business, no question.
Well, either that, or if they remain in business, they certainly will be closed by the government.
Oh, this is unbelievable.
Okay. And boarded up.
Wow. Okay, Herb
well,
Titus.
Well, this is very much like, Jerry, what happened to the Eastern European countries under communism.
Yeah.
Is that Christian people were not in business.
Wow. Okay, any closing thought? And by the way, where could people get more information if they wanted to read up on this?
Our brief is on our website, lawandfreedom.com. www.lawandfreedom.com. That's www.lawandfreedom.com. You will see not only this brief we filed in the Conestoga case, but a number of other briefs that we have filed over the years in a number of very important constitutional cases, not just having to do with freedom of religion, but other topics as well.
Any closing thought, Herb, for maybe 15 seconds?
Well, pray, because the heart of the judge is the channel of water in God's hands. We can pray for victory in the United States Supreme Court, and that's what we should be doing, praying, believing.
Mm. Okay, Herb, thank you so much. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Jerry.
God bless you.
Appreciate being with you.
All right, bye-bye now. That, again, Herb Titus, constitutional attorney. I'm so glad he's on our side. Lawandfreedom.com for more information. This is Jerry Newcomb. God bless you. We'll see you next week, Lord willing, right here on GraceNetRadio.com.
Thank you for listening to Vocal Point. The views and opinions were those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of GraceNetRadio.com or any of its staff, management, or affiliations. Join us next Thursday at noon for Vocal Point on GraceNetRadio.com.